Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Last year was the deadliest year for frontline environmental activists around the globe. 212 land and environmental defenders were killed for standing up against the destruction of their communities by multinational extractive and agribusiness industries. This is according to the London-based NGO Global Witness. They found that 1 in 10 defenders were women and 40% were indigenous. Globally, they say the true number of killings is likely much higher, as cases often go undocumented. According to their annual report, the COVID pandemic and the lockdown have intensified the problems land and environmental defenders face. The report says that governments around the world, from the U.S. to Brazil and Colombia to the Philippines, have used the crisis to strengthen draconian measures to control citizens and roll back hard-fought environmental regulations. Agribusiness, oil, gas, and mining are the key drivers of these murders. So what will it take to stop these deadly attacks? Joining us is Chris Madden, author of the report and senior campaigner at Global Witness. That's an organization that works to protect human rights and the environment by confronting corruption and challenging the systems that enable it. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi there.
Well, the reports you all put out every year are just so important. And sadly, last year's had a record high, 212. That's about 4 people a week. How do you all come up with these numbers?
So Global Witness has been tracking these attacks since 2011. And unfortunately, as you say, it's been rising and rising. So we're seeing more and more attacks against land and environmental defenders. These are people that we define as taking a peaceful stand for their land rights or their local environment. So it's quite a broad-ranging category of people that we put in this report. It could be, you know, local communities standing up to, as you say, industries encroaching on their land, such as mining or agribusiness. But it can also be you know, people looking out for local biodiversity, people working as park rangers, environmental lawyers have been attacked globally as well. So that's just the sort of definition of who we're looking at with these numbers. To do the reports, we have a systematic methodology that tracks these kinds of attacks. So we have, you know, various alerts, etc., that we document all of these cases. We need publicly available online information about these attacks as our sources, but we also work with organizations around the world that are doing this work at a national or local level.
A few things that stood out for us: 1 in 10 defenders were women, 40% were indigenous, and almost half of the killings took place in Colombia and the Philippines. What stood out for you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, this report, for the first time, we were looking at it in the context of the climate crisis. So that was the sort of major angle that we were hoping to get across, is that these people are on the front line of the climate breakdown that we're increasingly seeing. And linked to that, I guess, is that shocking statistic about indigenous peoples. So we detail in the report about how indigenous and local communities are vital in terms of protecting the remaining forests that we have around the world, and in particular in relation to, you know, biodiversity. But in this report, we were looking at the carbon that's stored and you know, safeguarded through their oversight, and that's a massive statistic. So to put it in context, so 40% of the killings globally were indigenous peoples, but they make up 5%. Approximately of the global population. So that's you know, quite stark in terms of how disproportionately they're affected. In terms of 1 in 10 attacks being against women, I think, is a really important thing to talk about as well. I mean, it might sound that that's lower, but we also detail the full range of attacks that defenders face, and women in particular face added pressures in terms of facing sexual violence, often stigmatization within the community, and you know, all of the roles that they have to play in terms of having the space for leadership and activism are additional pressures that women face.
And we'll remember individual activists. Let's talk about why Colombia and the Philippines have half of all reported killings last year. In your report, you write that reports show murders of community and social leaders across the country have risen dramatically in Colombia in recent years. And with 64 activists killed, those protecting their land and the environment were most at risk. So tell us first, what did you learn about Colombia? Why are the numbers so high there?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think it's not being overstating it by saying that, you know, the human rights defender and land and environmental defender situation in Colombia is a crisis. It's at crisis levels. As you say, there was a steep rise over the last few years. What we've seen as the reasons behind that are the so in 2016 there was a peace agreement signed that brought to end the conflict with the FARC guerrilla group, but since then the peace agreement hasn't been well implemented, and a lot of the areas where FARC was in control, there's been, you know, takeovers by criminal gangs, various paramilitary groups have sprung up, linked to both illegal mining and the coca trade. And the communities in these areas are in the crosshairs of this situation. A lot of the defenders that we documented in Colombia that were murdered, for example, were either taking part or vocal proponents of a coca substitution program that the government was supposed to implement through the peace process, but has had various issues with it. And these people are then targeted by those gangs or paramilitary groups for you know, essentially threatening the coca trade that they're making money out of. But I would say it's in both both Colombia and the Philippines, it's related to government policy a lot of the time. So the government in Colombia is often saying that these are local crimes and they're not part of a systemic problem across the country. And certainly in the Philippines, President Duterte has, you know, enacted a number of policies and given the military free rein in a lot of regions where these attacks are happening. And it's basically linked to, you know, extraction and economic development at all costs. And the defenders are in the crosshairs of that.
How has the COVID pandemic affected this? Because we've seen pretty extreme lockdowns in the Philippines.
Yeah, certainly. Well, in the Philippines, there has been martial law in a number of places for a number of years. So people are wary of government lockdowns already. And certainly the lockdown in the Philippines has been used to push through various different pieces of legislation, such as there's an anti-terrorism law that's gone through, which groups that we work with in the Philippines are very concerned about because it has a very broad range of who could be classified as a terrorist. And this is often a tactic that's used against people peacefully standing up for, you know, their land or their environment, is that they are labeled as terrorists. So this legislation in the Philippines is very concerning, and in Colombia we saw, you know, during the lockdown, at the start of the lockdown, we saw attacks against defenders because their location was known during lockdown. So, yeah, the COVID situation has definitely made things worse for defenders around the world. Hmm.
Today we're speaking with Chris Madden, author of the new report about the number of environmental activists and land defenders who were killed last year. It was a record, 212 people, or about four every week. If you have any questions about this report that's from Global Witness, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What will it take to stop these deadly attacks? You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's talk about the sectors that are connected to these murders. Your report says that killings related to agribusiness jumped by 60% to 34 killings last year. Researchers say as consumption of things like beef and palm oil increase, so too will deadly conflicts over land.
Yeah, certainly. In 2019, a lot of the cases that we were able to link to agribusiness took place in the Philippines, but again, this is an issue that's playing out around the world. So, you know, where agribusiness for commodities such as, you know, palm oil, soy, etc., taking place, they're often encroaching further and further into remote territories, and that's again one of the reasons why indigenous peoples are disproportionately threatened. What we're seeing, you know, in Brazil is President Bolsonaro's policies on the Amazon and opening up the Amazon are causing greater conflict, and the conflicts there are on the rise again. But certainly all across the Philippines and Southeast Asia, palm oil is causing a lot of these issues. And in South America, a lot more of the soy production.
You also found that mining was the deadliest sector, with 50 defenders killed in 2019. What can you tell us about mining?
So mining as I said, we've been doing these reports since 2011. Mining is always been the highest driver. So we have quite a broad definition of mining and extractives. It could be, you know, quarrying at a more local level, could be sand mining, right up to, you know, major massive coal mines or other larger industrial projects. And this is definitely happening around the world. Again, it's concentrated in the Philippines. In 2019, that industry has been causing a lot of the attacks. We don't say that the companies involved are directly linked. It's often very hard to say who the perpetrators were. But through our methodology, if a report is saying that a particular person was standing up against a particular project or campaigning against a particular mine, then we would link it to that.
Yeah, I was wondering that, because if I remember correctly, there were no companies named in your report. Is that right?
Yeah, so Global Witness, we do in-depth investigations. This particular report is a global report, so we rely on reports in local and international media. So we don't know the full story behind each attack. The aim of the report is to highlight this issue at a global level and particular places where it's the worst, but we're not looking into specific attacks. And often that information just isn't there. So a lot of the attacks are mentioned as you know, being perpetrated by anonymous hitmen. In Philippines, for example, it's often people with bandanas on motorbikes driving past. And so the people who are actually ordering those attacks is very, very difficult to tell. Very few cases globally get investigated. That's one of the key drivers of why this keeps happening. For example, in Colombia, one study found that I think it was up to about 95% of killings were not investigated to an outcome in the courts. So there's very high impunity levels, and including in countries such as Honduras, which was the highest per capita in our report.
You report 14 people were killed in Honduras. After the Colombian Philippines, it's Brazil, Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, Venezuela, Indian, Nicaragua, Indonesia, DR Congo, Burkina Faso, Romania, Kazakhstan, and then we get down to one in Uganda and Peru. The other thing that is so important about this report is, at a time when the climate crisis is getting so much more attention, these people are really just on the front lines of it all, Chris. And I mean, the actions of what people do here, for example, really does affect people on the front lines of the climate crisis and people who are being killed.
Yeah, absolutely. We live in a global world. We're facing a global, existential threat to survival, if you want to say it that way. And these, as you say, these people are on the front line of the climate crisis. They're standing up to, rampant projects that are both destructive to their local environment, but also very carbon intensive. And part of the sort of model of constant extraction and consumerism that we have as a global population. So it is a global issue. We're saying that that companies need to be doing better, governments need to be doing better, but there's also considerations around consumers and how we interact with those companies that we buy products from and what we expect of them in terms of their human rights policies, for example, and their practices throughout their supply chain.
Right, because as you said, everything is so globalized, from our food to what we're buying. Let's spend some time remembering a few of these activists. One of the activists you cite in your report is Angelica Ortiz, one of the prominent Wayuu women defenders of La Guajira, who for years has opposed the largest coal mine in Latin America as part of efforts to protect water rights for communities living in one of Colombia's poorest regions. Can you tell us more about her, or focus on a couple of other people who've been killed so we can remember a few of them?
So just important to note, so Angelica is still alive, thankfully. She's...
My mistake. I'm glad to hear that. Okay.
So just as an explanation, we do document the killings, but we also really want to focus on the fact that, I guess, for one, we can never know, the full extent of the killings. As I said, we rely on publicly available information, and that is severely lacking in a lot of countries. And two, we know that, the killings don't happen in a vacuum. There's often numerous different types of attacks or threats that defenders face before it gets to that stage. So whether or not that's non-lethal attacks, unfortunately, like beatings, etc., or if it's more legal attacks, so trying to criminalize defenders, as I was saying, for example, through like anti-terrorism legislation. So there's a broad range of attacks that defenders face, and Celike we included to highlight those issues that are ongoing in her area of northern Colombia. So her organization is quite vocal against a particular coal mine in their region and the water usage that mine has, and has faced a number of different threats and has had to move house and have protection measures put in place. She's cited reports of drones following her, for example, in surveillance technology. And she's been targeted by local paramilitary groups through online online smear campaigns through Facebook, for example, but also leaflets dropped in her community.
Wow.
So she's faced a whole range of threats and is, yeah, very vocal and an inspiration, really, like in terms of the courage that she has to keep going and to stand up for their land rights in the face of all of the attacks and threats that she's faced.
That's amazing. I mean, my apologies again to Angelica. She's being followed by drones.
That is... yeah, that's one of the things that she has said, the threats that she faced.
Wow. You know, you just remind me, we should do a show about people like Angelica to really focus on what they're doing and the risks they're taking on a regular basis. According to your report, one person who was murdered was Datu Kelo Bontolan. He was murdered in the Philippines after opposing illegal mining in the area. He's a Manobo leader, and he was one of many indigenous people killed, asserting their right to self-determination and protecting their ancestral lands from those looking to exploit their natural resources.
Yes, certainly. So, as I was saying, the Philippines is a particularly dangerous area and the worst in place in Asia in terms of standing up for land rights. That particular case, we have heard a lot from a woman called Bai, who is a traditional elder from that same community. That a lot of that community are now living in Manila because it's so unsafe for them to live in their traditional lands. Kalo in particular was going back to document some of the attacks that were happening in those communities, and he got caught in an attack on his way to do that. It's a very awful situation. The Pantheron mountain ranges where the traditional lands are is one of the sort of biggest intact forests in the country. And it's being increasingly threatened by a range of different industries, but in particular, mining companies have been exploring in the region for many years, and the community is being criminalized, as I was saying before, in terms of the range of attacks. So, that's one of the particular attacks that they're facing.
We also want to remember Liviu Pop, a Romanian ranger working to protect one of Europe's largest climate-critical forests. Liviu was shot and killed after protecting trees in a country where organized criminal gangs are decimating these forests. Before we let you go, the report outlines some really important changes that are needed to stop these deadly attacks. Can you go just over a few of them?
Yeah, certainly. So we are calling generally on all governments, but in particular those where the issues are most pronounced, to come out publicly and state support for this type of protest and for peaceful protest more generally, and for those kinds of legislation that have been brought in to be repealed that basically just criminalize freedom of expression and freedom to protest. But more importantly, to ensure accountability, so to ensure that these attacks are fully investigated and that the perpetrators are held to account, both the actual perpetrators, such as the hitmen, but also those ordering these attacks. In terms of companies and investors, we are advocating for companies to have a zero tolerance policy on land and on reprisals against land and environmental defenders, and making sure that they're doing adequate due diligence throughout their supply chain. So making sure that any suppliers or companies that they work with are not perpetrated or linked to these kinds of human rights abuses and attacks.
Well, we'd love to do another show about people who are putting themselves, their lives on the line, and then also learn more about the companies, which ones are actually doing anything about this, and which ones are just letting this happen. Do you have a list so we can look at the names of these companies?
We don't have a list like that. We have detailed in the report some companies that are making some steps in terms of developing policies around zero tolerance, like I was saying. But obviously there's a long way to go on that. But certainly, yeah, we'd be happy to discuss further at another time.
Well, thank you for your work, Chris, and thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
Chris Madden is author of the report that found 212 environmental activists and land defenders were killed around the globe last week. It's a record high. Global Witness is an organization that works to protect human rights and the environment by confronting corruption and challenging the systems that enable it. You can find the report at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we are going to learn more about the impacts of sea level rise and extreme coastal flooding on communities of color and low-income residents living near hazardous waste sites in the United States. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this.